Especially when he talks about the meta-narrative. Now, I hope that you paid attention to what he said. When he's speaking about the meta-narrative, he geeked out a little bit about literary theory, that he post-structuralist literary theory that he studied in college as an undergrad. But right after that, he talks about what is the meta-narrative. A meta-narrative is basically your sort of grand world view. And it's the thing that you have that helps you to make sense out of your existence, that makes you help make sense out of life, right? Well, for us Catholics, we have one of those. It's been handed to us. It's been given to us as a sacred deposit. It's called divine revelation. This is our Catholic grand narrative or great narrative. The Catholic grand narrative comes to us from divine revelation, from Genesis all the way to the Apocalypse, with special emphasis, of course, on the four Gospels and the life of our Lord Jesus Christ, and, of course, the oral tradition that goes along with that written scriptural tradition, too. We need to have that oral tradition as well. Of course, all mediated to us through the infallible teaching authority of the Church. But this is our meta-narrative, and meta-narratives are very important. They're important for all ancient peoples. Now, I suppose they're less important for certain peoples. I mean, the Greeks, for instance, weren't so much into history. Aristotle says that history is the least important study. I think E. Michael Jones makes a plausible case that when St. Paul attempted to evangelize the Greek-speaking world, he foundered when he preached in the Athenagoras because he talked about history, and the Greeks didn't give a darn about history. But later, when St. John addresses the Greek-speaking world with, in the beginning was the Logos, and the Logos was with God, and the Logos was God, then they're saying, aha, you're talking about Logos. We like that. You know, he's speaking to them about this concept that was so conceptually packed with philosophical concepts for the Greek speaker, for the Greek thinker. Be that as it may, still, there is some value for storytelling. And the Greeks, as much as they may have devalued history, they were certainly into stories. They had their epic poetry, right? They had their Homer. They had all that stuff, all of the Greek epic poems and so forth. It's part of any culture to have poetry, even if it's just bard songs or something, even sung in a language that's not yet written down, as the Scandinavian songs were. But we have our inspired meta-narrative. Why do you think that the Jews were constantly telling and retelling their history? So they have the inspired books of history, the historical books is one sort of section of the whole Old Testament or the Hebrew scriptures. And during the Old Testament, you know, every once in a while, you see somebody telling the whole story that came before. There's a psalm. It's prayed in the Divine Office on Saturdays, which goes through, I think it might be Psalm 117, it goes through the entire history of the Jewish people, what happened in the desert and so forth. St. Stephen, just before he's martyred, when he gives that, you know, killer sermon that got him stoned to death, he tells the entire story of the Jewish people. This is a thing that they constantly did. St. Paul does the same thing when he preaches. St. Paul tells his own conversion story multiple times. It might only be two, but maybe three times in the Acts of the Apostles. They're constantly recounting these stories. Why? This is the narrative. It's not just, okay, here's a series of abstract truths. Here's our creed. Credo in Deum, Patrum Omnipotentem, Creator Celestia et Terrae. Now, I hope that I would be willing to die, to shed all of my blood, to have a miserable death as a martyr for any one of the 12 truths that's in the Apostles' Creed. I'm certainly not diminishing the importance of the Creed. But what I'm saying is the Creed gets enfleshed in human history, and the telling of that story, the telling of that narrative, is what sets people on fire. That's what brings people to the faith. Now, of course, there's room, and there has to be room, for theological inquiry, for philosophical inquiry, for answering the big existential questions. But in the answer to those big existential questions that happens, where do we come from? Where are we going? For us, there's that inspired meta-narrative that we have, that inspired great narrative that comes to us from heaven, literally, that tells us where we came from. Because, gosh, nobody was there when the world was created. Go figure. So somebody who was there had to reveal it to us, and he did it through Moses. And that's what's in the book of Genesis. And where are we going? Well, you know, we learn about, you know, it is appointed for each man once to die, and then the judgment. And then we learn about the final judgment in Matthew chapter 24 and 25, when Jesus Christ talks about his second coming. We learn about this elsewhere also in the scriptures. We learn about the final battle between good and evil that's going to happen in the apocalypse. This is our meta-narrative. And one of the problems with Catholic modernism is this. Catholic modernism attacks that meta-narrative. It questions not only Genesis, it questions the apocalypse, it questions the Gospels. Pretty soon we're up at Christmas, right? Why do you think every Christmas, Time Magazine or some other heathen publication comes out with some piece of junk article attacking the infancy narratives, attacking the Christmas story? They're slowly chipping away at the story of salvation, at the Christian meta-narrative. Why? Because that meta-narrative forms lives. That meta-narrative is a certain guide for us to go from earth to heaven. And these people are, whether they're consciously or not, in the service of Satan. I'll just say it. You can call me a nut for saying it, but I'll say it. They are, whether consciously or not, because they don't want to be part of the meta-narrative. They don't want to be part of the Christian faith. They don't want to accept the truths of the Catholic faith. They don't want to accept the morals that goes along with it, because it might hamper them. It might, you know, somehow impede their libertine lifestyle. So they'll go on with some other narratives. They'll pick out the narrative that Hollywood supplies for them. They'll pick out the narrative that, you know, the music industry supplies to them. With all sorts of sexual libertinism. They'll grab onto all of these other narratives because it's not that the Christianity has been refuted. It's that a counter-narrative has been set up and has won over the popular mind, because you have these massive industries that have all this money to pour into putting that narrative into people's minds. Why is it that so many of our clergy, bishops, priests, so many of our religious go along with the COVID nonsense? Why? Because they've been taught to go along with what MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN. Did I miss any? I don't know. I don't care. But they NPR. Okay, I'm going to start calling government media, because you'll notice that even NPR, they'll refer to Russian media like TASS, or, you know, they'll refer to it as, you know, government media or the government press. Well, that's what NPR is. It's taxpayer funded. It's government funded press. All of them propagate a certain narrative. It's anti-Christian. At times, it sort of mildly tolerates Christianity, but fundamentally, it's anti-Christian. It postulates a worldview that's evolutionary. It's antithetical to the Christian faith. It's based upon sort of a cultural Marxist kind of narrative about history. And our priests listen to that stuff. Our bishops listen to that stuff. I'm obviously not saying everyone. Of course, there are exceptions. But by and large, they've imbibed the popular culture via film, via music, via the news, which isn't news. It's a tissue of lies that's marketed as reality. Now, every once in a while, you see that they lose, right? The oligarchs lose one or two, and which shows you that they are not unconquerable. Every once in a while, there's a little David who sort of takes a sword to Goliath, or a stone, as it were, to Goliath. And you saw this recently with the Kyle Rittenhouse affair. You saw it a couple of years before that with the Nicholas Sandman affair, when even Nicholas Sandman's own... So I'm not attacking Bishop, I think it was Bishop Foyes, but this is very illustrative of what I'm talking about. The meta-narrative of the gospel gets replaced by sort of the meta-narrative of the world. And I mean the world in that sense in which Jesus condemned it. that world which is spoken of pejoratively all throughout St. John's Gospel, especially the last few chapters. That's the world I'm speaking of. The world has this meta-narrative that is fundamentally secular. It's this worldly. Its end is in this world. Its purposes are in this world and has nothing to do with heaven. It disregards heaven. It disregards all this mythology of Christianity. It just dispenses with it and flippantly disregards it. This is what we get in the news. And Bishop Foyes of Covington, Kentucky, that's his diocese, when his own flock, his own lambs, not just the sheep, but his lambs, the little ones, high school students, went to a pro-life rally in Washington, D.C., and Nicholas Salmon had this bizarre altercation with this Indian fellow, this Native American guy, who's an activist, who's a big fake, a big fraud, a big phony, who set this whole thing up to make this poor little European guy with a pale face complexion look like he was some sort of anti-Native bigot wearing a MAGA hat and laughing at the old Indian man. Well, it turns out what happened was completely different than that. The supposed victim was the actual aggressor. The supposed aggressor was the actual victim. And, CNN and the Washington Post or New York Times and other media outlets got sued. Now, they settled out of court. Unfortunately, Sandman's lawyer, Lynn Wood, did settle out of court. They should have not settled out of court. They should have made it go to trial. But be that as it may, they lost. And everybody realized, they saw how the sausage gets made. And they saw how this thing was so fraudulent, so fake, so phony from top to bottom. We all need to, these are the little moments where we can say, you see, this, we just had the veil lifted. We just saw what the newsroom is like in the back.